Okay, everybody, this is Tracy Erickson with Close to Home. Thanks for joining us today. We have a very special guest and also a dear friend of ours, Luis Arruela. And we are talking to Luis today because he is one of the many Seattleites who travels back and forth to Alaska multiple times a year to fish. And this has been something that has been part of his family for a really long time. And so we just thought it would be interesting to connect and talk about what he's been up to. So Luis, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So let's maybe get started. You know, I think the story of your family coming from Portugal and, you know, this is really how you got started in fishing, correct? Maybe tell us a little bit about that, and, you know, how you ended up here.
Well, my story into fishing is more of a, that's a different story, but the family story is a good one. I guess it started a while ago. I guess I don't know if you want me to start at the beginning, but I can try to make it as quick as possible. So my grandfather, so my mom's and my dad's, both my grandfathers were fishermen. My dad was a fisherman. So my mom's dad, this is the interesting, there's two stories. So my dad's dad was a dory fisherman. He fished on the ice fields over in Greenland and on the East Coast there off of Canada and fish for, they longlined for cod. So they would come over with a smaller boat than you'd think with a lot of guys on it. And they would be gone for, I think it was something like 8 months straight or some crazy number like that.
Wow.
And they would, you know, work crazy amount of hours and sleep very little for that duration. They'd have times in port. They'd go to Canada and stuff like that. My other grandfather is kind of the way we kind of got over here. And he's basically, you know, the reason why I am who I am, I guess I would say. But so he actually immigrated from Portugal, I believe in the mid 60s to Germany, to a place called Bremerhaven. Okay. And that's a port town, shipyards, you know, long, you know, industrial type of place. So when they immigrated there, I should probably preface this with from my knowledge, from 1965 to 1975, I think they say something like 10% of the Portuguese population immigrated.
Oh,
and
wow.
I fall within that statistic, I guess.
Yes.
Because I came here in, 76, so I'm just outside the line.
Yeah,
But my grandfather went to Germany. So the story that I've always been told was that at the time, the United States government wanted to explore the Bering Sea on a prospective sort of approach in terms of seeing what was out there, what kind of fish, how much of it, you know what I mean?
Right.
I guess there were the beginning stages of commercializing it on a larger scale, or at least going down that road.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, my grandfather is immigrating to Germany, and he happens to get on, in my edit, like a couple uncles and stuff like that, happens to get on one of the two ships that the Kennedy administration, might be wrong, approached the German government about bringing over, because the Germans at the time were the ones with all the expertise, right? Like they were the high level commercial fishing country that really knew what it was doing on a large scale, at sea scale.
Yeah.
So anyway, so they gets on the boat. The boat comes over to Boston, and I think they spend like a month and a half in Boston doing some repairs, and then they're going to bring it through the canal on over to Seattle to do the final stages of whatever. This is in the 60s, to go up to the Bering Sea. During that time, my mom actually came over. She was a teenager, maybe my son's age. And she spent a couple, 3 weeks over here. So she was technically the first gal in the family to step over the pond, which was a big deal back in the, I mean, you can imagine back in the 60s.
Of course.
And we're pretty old now, so 60s is
Yeah.
Ago, even though I wasn't alive yet.
Right.
So anyways, long story short, the boat comes to Seattle. And back then, you know, immigration was different than we all kind of know how it is now from watching, you know, politics these days. The U.S. government was very welcoming to immigrants. And that's how, you know, it was the labor that built the country, and that doesn't get talked about much, but whatever, that's a different topic. So that family goes up there, and then we proceed to get green cards because they were easy to get. Of course, the country needed labor. But my mom and my dad came over. Meanwhile, actually, my dad was in. So I was born in 75, and prior to that, my dad was in Africa, fighting. You know, Angola and Mozambique were Portuguese colonies. So my dad was in Africa, right? And he's actually, it's kind of another interesting story. He was a chauffeur for the top general dude there, so he got to live in a palace, and so he had it pretty slick.
So your grandpa's on the boat. Your mom, yeah. Your grandpa's on the boat. Your mom comes over and is like, I'm gonna come check out Seattle. So she's here for 3 weeks. In that period of time, your dad is down in Africa, mm-hmm. Being a chauffeur, but then also doing other things. Correct. So then at what point does your mom and your dad meet?
Well, so my mom and dad have known each other since they were like 7, 8, 9 or something like that. Cause literally they were born in the same town, like on the same block, but on opposite sides of the block.
Oh,
like we're from a really small town. Yeah. A little fishing town in Portugal called Afogada.
Okay.
Go ahead.
No. So then your dad, how does your dad get from Africa up to Seattle?
So my dad comes back. Meanwhile, my mom's like coming over here, and my dad's not, fishing is all that we've ever known, and it comes from his family. He doesn't want to do it, right?
Yeah.
My dad gets back from Africa, and my mom gets pregnant. This is 75, I guess.
Yeah.
My timing might be off in terms of how this all comes, but it's all happening at the same time.
Yeah.
Anyway, so my dad decides that, they get married, this is what I'm going to do. So he comes over, and he starts fishing over here. Meanwhile, my grandfather already had been here for a little bit. He actually... When my grandfather came to Dutch Harbor for the very first time, he actually, to help maintain his status, I guess, and be able to get green cards for the rest of the family, he actually stayed here, I think it was for like 2 years or something like that. And he was like in Dutch Harbor for months on end. I want to almost say like past a year, maybe two.
Yeah.
Digging what you know, today's existing sewer lines for Dutch Harbor. And you imagine up there, it's like rock. Anyways, so we, had it pretty rough, but we kept pushing through, and things happened really quickly. It wasn't like it was like a long period of like really, really rough labor. Fishing is tough. That part of it's tough. But
So your dad was like, he came back, he found a boat to work on here that was going back and forth to Alaska.
He had a job within 24 hours of landing in Seattle.
Okay.
And he was never unemployed ever since then.
So he came back, and that boat was going back and forth to Alaska.
Correct. Actually, it was fishing off the coast. That was a little smaller boat that my dad fished off the coast for two, 3 years or whatever before he went up the hill, as we call it.
To
Alaska. Yeah.
And then your grandpa, he was trying to maintain get residency here. So he was basically just, I'll do whatever I need to do. He was up in Dutch Harbor, digging. And then he would continue to fish. Mm-hmm. And so then, you have siblings, correct? So then, your dad's coming back and forth, and they have two more kids. Is that right?
So my dad and my mom have me and my sister.
Okay.
I have a bunch of aunts and uncles and stuff and cousins
okay.
that are actually all part, like I have, I think all my uncles, but two were fishermen in the Bering Sea, and a large portion of cousins actually fished also. And actually were, through our company, through our boat, later on with my dad running it when he had established his business. So he trained quite a bit of fishermen that are up there currently.
So, but your dad's, you're young, you're born, your dad's like working for another boat, you're growing up in, the fishing industry of him, going out to the coast or going up to Alaska. So at what point did your dad, two questions I have. At what point did your dad say, okay, I want my own boat, I'm going to do my own thing. And at what point did you know, I'm going to be doing that when I graduate from high school?
Well, my dad, obviously, when he went up to Alaska, he got on, there's a boat or two, then he got on a boat called Royal American. It was owned by a guy named Olaf, Norwegian, of course. And so he, back then, there wasn't a lot of guys that could, that because the industry was evolving. So the captains and the know-how and all that stuff was evolving quickly. My dad was a pretty quick learner, and he was pretty clever and learned how to, you know, kind of be the main guy on deck, if you will. And when you do that, and he did, you know, he was like an engineer. He was a good engineer, which is a great skill to have. He was good at all that stuff. So he quickly was kind of stood out as an option as a relief skipper. So when the, because the boats back then worked year round, a lot of boats still do, but there was a lot of very little downtime. And these guys owned their own boat, so they had mortgage payments, but they also wanted to go home. So they needed someone to fill in. So my dad got a quick shot, and right away, at a very young age, he, about 30-ish, I guess, he really made a name for himself. And so he stood out, and there wasn't a lot of captains available, and the industry was growing and growing and growing. So he was approached by two gentlemen that would become his partners, or my dad would become their partners. So he was approached by those two gentlemen. They knew he was good at what he did, and they said, we'd like you to come work for us. And I think within a year, he was a, you know, a partner, an equal partner to the other two. My dad brought his brothers, some cousins, and that was the crew. And anyway, so he started, that was the Oceanic. So he proceeded to, you know, plot away the years and fish away and get better, but made the boat better. The boat was a little kind of, a little beat up, but we, you know, modernized it, or he modernized it over time. And then that was in the early 80s or mid to early 80s. And then of course I graduated in 94 from Blanchett High School. And I proceeded to try to go to school after that. That didn't go too good for me.
Had you ever, sorry to interrupt you, had you ever prior to graduating from high school in the summer gone up with your dad?
No. You can talk to fishermen. They'll tell you, like, you know, we're, take my kids up in the summer, and it's a different, like, where we came from, it was harder in terms of just life in general, not so much the job. Like, here it was just a different fishing culture than where we came from, so for us it was kind of like, we don't want, you know, for the Portuguese family or the Portuguese father who's a fisherman, it's more like, I don't want my son to do what I did. That's kind of the vibe. So there was a lot of that, and I quite frankly didn't want to. I actually wanted to do what you do. I loved houses. Well, I still mean,
we're always hiring.
My favorite app is Zillow. So I'm like,
let me just tell you, don't believe the Zestimate. Okay. Whatever
you
do.
Don't believe the hype.
Yeah. Don't believe the hype. You call me for that.
But, that's right. Like your husband emails me all the time. So anyway, as I approached my beginning in my career, it was most like just kind of what I wanted to do, you know, different things. That's not what I was thinking I was going to do or was trying to do. I think a little bit of lack of effort when I was young and not having to worry. You know what I mean? Like, when the pressure's on, you kind of perform. And that's something I learned about myself later on in terms of working, but kind of easy when I was young. But I just kind of woke up one day, and you know my wife well. My now wife was about to graduate from college, and I kind of looked at myself in the mirror and said, "Oh boy,
if I want to land this girl, I better figure it out." Yeah.
So, anyways, approached my dad, said, "Hey, I want to go," and he actually didn't want me to go. He was pretty disappointed that, I mean, I'm like 22 at this point, right?
Yeah.
So I was kind of I was working and stuff. It wasn't like I was just not having a job or something. But I needed to get serious. And so I went fishing, and then 6 years, my dad just threw me into the fire. Like, it was like, you know, my life depended on it in terms of learning the job. And 6 years later, I'm running the boat. So
what did you think
when I started?
What did you think that first time when you went up there, when, you know, your dad's like, all right, fine, we're going to give you a chance, like, come up, you know, like, you're doing this. Were you like, oh my God, what did I do? Or were you like, is great.
I kind of knew, like, I punished myself and I deserved it. So I just kind of rolled a little bit. I wasn't intimidated or anything like that. I didn't like question anything. I just, you know, I just knew I had to see it through. There's some moments, you know, up until that point in my life, I didn't really have to do anything too hard or didn't have to, you know, where it mattered or had to try.
Totally.
You know, there's a lot of focus on me, and that, you know, now that the kid is up there, you know, the boss's kid, and know, I'm surrounded by uncles and they're all tough dudes. So I had to gut check a couple times and just got through it. And talking to you.
So 6 years later, your dad, does your dad decide, hey, like you've been doing this for 6 years. Like I feel comfortable now leaving my partnership in the boat, or happened at that point?
Well, he, you know, right around at the exact same time, he's like thinking about retirement. He's probably, my dad's like born in 51. This is 2000 and.
So he's probably like in just maybe in his 50s at this point.
Yeah, he's in his 50s. Yeah. He's like, he's good.
Yeah.
And well, he can cut, but he can pull out, right? He can get
out. Yeah.
So I decided to show up, and he's like, I'm sure it kind of frustrated him a little bit, but he toughed it out. And like I said, he just trained me super hard for the top spot. And
the top spot is what, for the people that don't know?
Well, for me it was, I have a partner that helps me run it. I'm inside the rails, he's outside the rails. So I have a partner who is the son of one of the partners. We have three partners. And him and I kind of operate the ship literally. And he, you know, takes care of the outside stuff. And
what's the outside stuff? Like, do you mean like the outside of the boat or?
There's a whole nother layer on top of the boat, right? We're partners in a larger seafood company called Premier Pacific Seafoods. And I'm on the board of directors of that. So I actually have stuff to do outside the boat in terms of operating
and catching
fish. My other partner, he helps me, or I help him. We help each other take care of our boat. There's political stuff. He's on boards for stuff. There's all kinds of commissions for the fishing business or our sector for pollock, which is what we catch. So it's just, there's all these little moving parts and people and you got to deal with and politics and science.
It's the business side of it. You're not just up there catching fish. Like there's a whole business side of this that you're heavily involved with.
Correct. And then even when I'm up there, I have to have board meetings. I've had to, board meeting on the phone or when I'm in town in Dutch Harbor or whatever. I mean, it never stops. Technology has actually taken a huge leap. I mean, 5-6 years ago, I couldn't do what I could do at sea.
Right.
You could, but you pay a premium for it. But now that the technology is advanced to do this.
So you're 22, you decide to go up on the boat, you start doing that, your dad retires, you're stepping into a bigger role. You and Maria, obviously have gotten married and you're starting to have children. So year over year, what does it look like for your family? Like how many times are you in Alaska? How long are you gone for? What's that look like? I mean, during those, times when you're taking over and all of that.
Mm-hmm. When I first started it was a little bit more, but right now I'd say I go up two times a year for two different seasons. One's called A season and the other one's called B season. And the first one's is also known as roe season. So there's a lot of eggs in the fish. So we fish pollock, of course. When I first started, I was gone. So anyways, that first season starts in January. So it opens January 20th.
Yeah.
And then it closes and basically turns into B season on June 10th.
Right. Okay.
Just keep fishing. So give you an idea for scale. I myself have to catch anywhere from 8,000 to 9,000 metric tons of pollock.
Tons.
Yeah.
Tons.
And I'm one of like, 5 or 6 other boats that do it. We're just one company, and there's one other company that does what we do, and then there's different sectors, but we all kind of create the same product in different business models. But yeah.
So Christmas rolls, you're home for Christmas.
I'm home for Christmas.
And then, you're home for Christmas. I know that. And then you're gone.
January.
Yeah. So then after Christmas, kids go back to school, dad leaves, heads to Alaska, and you have to catch 8,000 to 9,000 tons in season A.
Season A is like more like a little over 3,000, like 3,000.
So you got to catch. So you get up there. And so where's the boat? Do you have to take, does the boat go back and forth? Or is it just up there?
It does come down. We do it when we know we have kind of a large scope of work to do on it. Right now it's in Dutch Harbor. And interestingly, you asked that question. This was our year we were supposed to bring the boat down to Ballard to do a haul out down at bottom of 24. And, but I actually, and this kind of goes into the COVID thing, I actually pulled the plug on it because I was concerned with getting things done, most importantly, because there's so much like protocol with shipyards, unions. I didn't really want to, you know, have to not bring, you know, pay a bunch of money because it costs quite a bit of money to drive the boat down, drive it back in fuel. And I didn't want to get down here and just not be able to do anything and then spend all this money and then take it back. So I left it there.
Generally, that's where the boat is. So when you are heading up there in January, the boat is there, and you and how many other crew members are getting on to start that A season?
So on my ship or my boat, there's five of us, me and four other guys.
There's five. Okay.
Mate, engineer, guy's kind of the cook, and then the deck boss. Everybody has a responsibility, but we all work on deck when it's time to do the fishing part of it. But in terms of the everyday maintenance, everyone has a duty.
Are you the driver?
I get to drive the bus. Yeah.
You're the bus. Okay. So you're the bus driver. So,
yeah.
And you guys, there's no, like, when you get there, you're on the boat, you sleep on the boat. There's not like, oh, we're going to stay in a hotel for a few days. It's like you get there and you just get on the boat.
Yeah. On a normal year, I won't even really mention COVID, but on a normal year, we'll fly up January 15th, let's say, fire things up, find some gremlins in the boat if there is any. And then, we'll go fishing on the 20th, let's say. Then we'll stay out at sea. When we're in town, you know, there's restaurants there. We'll go out
and
beer or something like that, or dinner or whatever.
Maybe just one beer, just one.
Like three. So we'll go out and we'll do it for like, if it goes well, 12 days. There's been times it's gone way longer than that, sometimes quicker. But let's just say we go out for 12 days and we'll come back in. And then, so when I go out, it's me, my boat, and like another boat or another, like three catcher boats.
And how do you know? How do you know where you're going?
Well, like, it's learned knowledge, passed on knowledge. You know, you know where to go, where not to go. You know where kind of to start. You know, at the beginning of the season, we'll go on to start here, and then you know, sometimes you can end up by Russia. Literally, it's like
fish
literally on the Russian line with Russian boats on the other side. So we'll go out for. With three catcher boats and a mothership. So that our seafood company that our partners in that I spoke of has two processing platforms. So we deliver bags of fish at sea to them while, you know, in motion, if you will, and then they'll process it aboard. So then we'll come back. So when we fill up the mothership, we'll come back in with it and she'll offload in Dutch Harbor, either at the dock or next to like what's the tramper, which is they'll just, you know, transfer this, you know, pull it side by side with another boat and they'll just transfer it over and then take it over to Japan or China or whatever. So we'll be in town for like 2 days. We'll get some odds and ends done, take fuel if necessary, groceries, this kind of fresh stuff. And then we'll do it again, you know, and I can do 3, 4, 5 trips in a season. So I can be gone and it can go quick and it can go slow. We've had everything in between, but it, you know, an A season, it should be a little under 2 months, and a B season is a little over. But it's about 4 months a year for me. You know,
so, you know, segments. For A season, you're coming back, what, at the end of March?
Yeah, so if I get up there like January 15th, you can almost make it 2 months after that. So like March, hopefully sooner. Yeah. Like last year, I was home March 6th, you know, right before the pandemic hit, so.
And then you're home. And then when do you head back up for B season? Isn't that coming up soon?
Yes, actually, I had to do a bunch of shifting of stuff tickets wise. I have two guys that live in Europe or in Portugal that have to fly this way, so it's kind of hectic. But I'll be flying up the crew will be flying up the 13th
of June.
And we got some things. So we're going to be spending some time in Dutch Harbor doing some work and stuff and hauling the boat out. We'll have to get hauled out mandatorily, you know, by the Coast Guard to get inspected and checked out. So we'll be doing that up there.
So let's talk about like being out at sea, because, you know, you're out there. It's, you know, just the ocean. You're out in the middle. I mean, you know, I guess the first question that comes to mind is the weather, especially in the winter, you know, I mean, And, you know, I mean, you've been up there enough years in your family, and obviously, you know, terrible things can happen. Sure. With the weather. I mean, have there been times where you're just like, oh, shit, this is bad weather, or like, you know, it's coming, or what do you do when, you know, I mean, it gets bad up there? Do you turn around and come in?
Oh, you can. Yeah, there's definitely opportunities where you'd want to do that if you can. Sometimes you're just too far away from any sort of shelter. I'm sure you've seen my Instagram post where I'm staring at the back of a mountain or something like that. That's us anchored up, being protected, if you will. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I've never had an oh shit moment, if you will. My dad did a really good job teaching me not just how to catch fish, but the other stuff, and making sure I understood safety and how to approach things and how to make decisions. Because like when you're fishing in a group like we fish, I'm not the only one making decisions. We make group decisions, and sometimes, you know, in the past, let's just say in the old days, you know, guys would push the limits. You know, we don't push those limits anymore. And that has to do with times changing and people being wiser and liabilities. I mean, there's all, everything kind of goes into a pot and you kind of stir it. But yeah, I mean, you see some crazy stuff. I always say when it comes to talking about like, what's it like up there, you know, that I'm sure you've heard people ask me that before. It's hard. Yeah. I mean, as I get older, I kind of don't talk about it as much or try to explain it, because I know deep down inside, it's just, I know they don't get it. You know what I mean?
No.
But I mean, but living at sea, or being out, you know, especially away from your family, that's the trick. It's dealing with that part. Cause anybody can go somewhere for a week, right? We go places like for a week for vacation. But when you're gone for 2 months and you have children, you know, you got a wife at home, and I got other things I do in Seattle that I have to preoccupy myself with. But it can be stressful. And that's, you know, yesterday I took Benny to get his suit for his eighth grade graduation. There's a big young kid that was working there. You know, the guy looked like he's stronger than the house. And he's like, do you think I can do it? And I'm like, man, I know dudes that are half your size that can do it. I know dudes that are your size that cannot. So it's not about being tough.
Right.
It's kind of like a mental thing. So if you do that. Yeah, you can get through it, but it's not for everybody, for sure.
Well, and I would assume being up there, I mean, I would think you have a lot of time just to get in your head, you know, like, especially for you. Yeah, especially for you. I just picture you like up in the driver's seat, you know, and it's quiet and, you know, maybe dark. I don't know.
Yeah, it can be a lot of times.
Yeah, you know, and obviously you also said that technology has come a long way. So I'm assuming now, you know, you have access to more than what you had before, like just podcasts or, you know, just, you know, like social media, I mean, to see what's going on and all of that. Whereas like, you know, back in the early 2000s or, you know, you're not looking at Instagram and going, oh my gosh, that's so cute. They were at the park today. Yeah. Or
it's you have crazy no idea. That part of it is actually a big thing for just cruise in general. Like, you know, I can get on Instagram. I can post pictures of me delivering a bag. I can, I can video chat my kids, text anybody anywhere on the planet, anytime, get instant news. So that's that part, you know, when I first started, and I got on the boat, we had like VHS tapes for movies.
Yeah. Right?
And we'd go out for like, back then we'd go out for like 20 days or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't a big reader. I became a better reader, but you have like a handful of magazines, and that was intense.
Totally.
But now it's like, you know, guys have movies galore, and some guys actually have, you know, they can stream movies at sea. So some guys, that's where we're at right now, or some guys streaming Netflix to their bunks in the middle of a storm. So pretty wild.
Yeah. So what else? So, okay. So let's talk real fast. Well, I mean, so last year, you know, probably 14 months ago, and the pandemic hits. So were you finishing up season A, or were you in Seattle at that point?
So the 2020 A season, as we call it, was wrapped up, and I got to Seattle on March 6th.
Okay.
The next day, Maria's uncle had his funeral or memorial service, and her entire dad's side of the family was there.
Wow.
And I think about 5-6 days later, we shut this country down. So it's kind of funny looking back that's what we did. But
and nobody got COVID. Nobody got COVID from that.
Not that day.
Not that day. Okay.
Not that day. At least not there.
Yeah.
But anyways, we get back and it all kind of starts to sink in, right? When schools get shut down, the country gets shut down, you know, things are starting to happen. And I actually had my folks here in town visiting.
From Portugal. Correct.
Then President Trump at the time started doing some travel stuff. Yeah. And I kind of told him, I was like, who knows what's going to happen next? You guys should go back.
You gotta go home.
Because the main residents over there, healthcare stuff and all that. So just get you back to where you need to be. So then it all starts to happen, and we, you know, start planning and dealing with it on the company level at the, you know, for the board of directors and the president there, how we handled this, and it's all new, right? So we're putting all this protocol. You know, we're getting technical advice from medical outfits. And we go up and literally that first B season. So, you know, we come back after A season, it hits.
Yeah.
You know, now everything's changed. We go back up for B season in June.
Yeah. So in the middle of it. Yeah. In
Correct.
The thick of it. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's going down, right? It's starting to happen, or it's really happening.
Yeah. And, yeah. It's totally happening.
So there's always protocol for flying. So we fly to Anchorage. I had actually chartered a private plane from Anchorage to Dutch Harbor. So we flew Alaska all the way up there to Anchorage. And then we did a charter because I didn't want to have anybody on the plane. So it was just me and my crew. We just tested, you know, everyone passed. We just figured from that point forward, we're going to really like hunker down because it was all pretty new. We didn't really
know
the science, right?
No.
So we're all masked up and do the whole nine yards. We get there. We get escorted directly to the ship, to our boat, to the Oceanic. And we have to fly a quarantine flag and we have to follow all this protocol.
Oh.
We quarantined. We couldn't get off the boat. So once we stepped on the boat that day after landing, you know, an hour after landing, we stepped on the boat. My crew stepped off a handful of times just for maybe an hour, but for 2 months or 67, or I think it was 68 days, I never even stepped off the boat. So when I got there, I didn't get off. I mean, I was just like, there's nothing for me. I'm just here to make money and catch fish. So I'm just like, I don't really need to go anywhere. Luckily, there was a lot of stuff that the town did really good, all things considered. They did some things that maybe I wouldn't agree with, but they, you know, the grocery store would bring us, you know, a pallet of food.
I was going to say, how are you getting groceries?
It was, that part was good. I mean, we actually had food delivered to us. There's a huge town. They would bring us, we have a harbor master too. And the guy, he actually watches our boat. So people were, you know, helping each other out. It's a little unorthodox up there, but the folks
doing
in town
the best
did
they could.
Job.
Yeah.
That was good.
Good.
And we did another
good.
Season the same sort of way. Now we're here. So, but actually last season, this last A season of this year, I got up there and I was shortly thereafter, about a month after I got up, I got vaccinated. So there was we were kind of at the forefront because we're food and agriculture kind of category. So they wanted to make sure they got workers and people that do that sort of thing vaccinated. So that's how I got my vaccine. So I've been vaccinated for fully vaccinated for a month and a half, 2 months, I think.
That's great. Well, and now when you guys go up for B season in a couple of weeks or, you know, 3 weeks, I'm assuming your whole crew will be vaccinated.
Yep. Yeah. We're
totally.
All, we're
So, it'll be all good. Yeah. Totally.
We'll still rock the masks, but as a formality and out of respect for other people. But it just feels good to know that when you look at the numbers, it feels nice to know that you're in a different category for getting it or not getting it. So it's kind of nice.
So I guess just a few last questions. So you have three kids. You have two boys and a girl. Our girls could actually be twins. they look very much alike.
They do.
But your two boys are older. So Benny is a freshman?
Benny is an eighth grader at St. John's. He's graduating.
Oh, Benny's an eighth grader. Okay.
And he'll be a freshman next year at my alma mater and Maria's alma mater, actually, where we met at Blanchett High School.
Yeah.
And then while he's a new freshman there, Zach, our oldest, who's 17, will be a senior at Blanchett. So we'll have two kids in there, actually two nieces and nephews, or a niece and a nephew. So we'll have my wife will have somebody in the family in each grade, which is kind of fun.
So, you know, what if one of your boys comes to you and says, Dad, I want to get on the boat?
Yeah, the only thing I would say is if that day were to come, I would hope that the fortunes that I was fortunate to have, he has the same sort of, you know, deal, if you will. I hope he doesn't. But I think I might get lucky with these two boys. They're pretty smart. They're pretty good, and they have their own plans. So I was not like them.
I feel so fortunate for where we live because there's just so many opportunities for these kids, you know, in different schools for, you know, I mean, there's a school for any kind of interest or need or, you know, so when I grew up, it was, well, you live on that street, so you go to that school, you know, it wasn't endless opportunities. Yeah. So how many years do you think you have left, old man?
Golly, you know, it's funny after a year that we've had for me personally, things are a little foggy. I'm not too concerned about what's to come or anything like that. And I just feel like around me, the fog hasn't settled yet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm involved. I have other investments and things that I do outside of the fishing thing. And, you know, until everything calms down, I'll feel better about the future. But I don't know kind of what your question was. But
so I guess, do you want to share what, because you're not, you know, you're not just going back and forth to Alaska. I mean, hence your t-shirt, Little Woodies. What else are you involved with?
Of course,
you're always representing. Look at me. I have nothing with compass on it. I mean,
you should wear a big headband that says it.
I know. It's a missed opportunity.
I would totally get those.
Yeah. I think people would just be dying to talk to me.
I would wear one.
Yeah. Yeah. So what else, you know, when you're not up there and even when you are, because you're still doing it, you know, what have you chosen to invest in Seattle and what are you a part of?
Well, I'm involved with a gentleman named Marcus Lilario and great guy. First off, does a lot of good for this city. And it's funny. We met the same way I kind of met Marcus. We met at St. John's with our kids. And I actually met Marcus because of St. John's.
You and I met at St. John's because of our kids. And
we did. And then I met this partner of mine, this associate of mine that I got involved with. Mm-hmm. So I have small stakes through different businesses throughout Seattle. Little Woodies is one of them.
Little Woodies, for those of you that don't know, it's a burger place.
It is.
And it's amazing.
Right now it's a pizza place too. They're not cranking out pizzas, but they did a cool burger with the Pagliacci, actually. Go check it out.
Oh, they did?
And Pagliacci has a Little Woody pizza. So
I love it. Cross-marketing.
People at Little Woody's are pretty crazy.
How many locations does Little Woody's have?
Little Woody's has one. So there's one on Capitol Hill, one in Ballard.
Yes.
One in White Center at the Beer Star Center, which is a really cool place.
Mm-hmm.
I believe there's two now at Safeco Field. I know that there was a second spot. I don't know if it was because of COVID, but they have one spot out in the outfield there. I forget what that area is called. There's a store there. That was the first ones. And then there's a second one, I think, now. And there's also, a Fats Chicken and Waffles that I'm lucky to be a part of with some really cool people. Erica White is one. She's the big boss and the manager too. She's what makes that place take. Go check that out.
Yeah.
And then there's a couple other spots in Georgetown. And it's.
Kevin and I are still waiting, you know, waiting for you to take us somewhere for dinner. We're hungry, Lewis.
Do you want some French fries? I'll bring you some French fries.
I always want French fries. Hello.
No, we'll do it. I manage my dad's affairs, which is basically a business, and then my god, stuff, other stuff, not as exciting. I might be doing more cool stuff though.
Oh wow!
Can't tell you though. You know. You might have to do a part two.
If you want to get into real estate.
I might need your help.
Hey, that's what we're here for. That's what we're here for. Well, I just want to thank you for, you know, spending some time with me this afternoon and telling us, you know, all about your interesting story and your family, and just really appreciate it. So thank you.
I appreciate you guys. Thank you so much. Hope to see you guys soon.
All right. Signing off from close to home. Thanks for joining us today.
I promise I'll take you out to dinner. And your husband too, sir.